All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. It's called WTF. Yeah, we're in the home stretch here, so if you're just getting on board, you got a lot of catching up to do. Yeah, there's about 1,600 some odd, but you know, take your time. It only took us 16 years to get here. For all those of you who are just always here, welcome. How are you? How's everything going? I'm on the verge of being ecstatic. Something happened, like literally, like 20 minutes ago. I'm not sure how it happened. We don't always know how these things happen. But it's a fear. You fear it happening. So I got out here to the studio, and I was going to, you know, use the restroom. And I'm looking at my phone. I was going to sit down. That's probably TMI, but I was going to do some business. And, you know, I don't know where my phone was situated or how I was holding it or whether it was in my pocket or not. But I was turning around. I had my pants up. They were undone, but they weren't down. But I was getting ready, and I heard that plunk. The plunk of a fucking iPhone going in the toilet, and I fucking just snapped it out quickly. Clean toilet. Snapped it out quickly before it even submerged. So just one end of it went in. But sadly, the charger end. But I got it out, and I dried it off, and everything seemed to be working okay. And I've got to give a shout-out, I guess, to OtterBox. Holy shit, OtterBox Drop Plus. That is the case that was housing the iPhone when it went into the toilet. But I think it's going to be okay. Is that fucking crazy? I grabbed it before. I hope I'm not talking too soon. Because I went up and I got one of those aerosol spray the air out things. And I sprayed out the holes, the speaker holes. The speakers are working. I sprayed out the air. I aerated the plug hole. I checked all the buttons. The screen is scrolling. And only that end submerged a little bit for a second. It's all it fucking takes, though. You know how it goes. God damn it. I'm supposed to leave town. Now, I don't even know if I can go if I have to get a new iPhone. So I plugged it in, and it looked like it was charging. But then all of a sudden it said, cannot charge. Do you want to go to emergency charge? And I'm like, I didn't even know that was an option. But if you can emergency charge, why can't you just charge it? So then I freaked out again, and I ran back up into the house, and I sprayed more air in there at all different angles to the point where I was almost running out of air. And it seems to be charging. But you know how this goes, man. You've got, when you get these fucking phones and you drop them or break them or get them in water, it's like, oh, it seems to be working. And then like 2 hours later, it's like, nope, sucker, stupid. Go spend a fortune on another iPhone. But I don't know. I'm telling you, man, OtterBox, this is not a paid promotion because that would have cost, well, I don't know. It's actually probably cost more than an iPhone to get an ad on here. But whatever the case, I have an OtterBox Drop Plus, but it's looking good. Fucking nuts. I can't deal with my fucking cat, Charlie, anymore. I can't deal with it. Anyway, Rich Aronovich is on the show today. Now, Rich, I've known for a long time, kind of. He was a young comic when I was in New York. He lived around the corner from me. And I've seen him over the years, but it's been a long time. It's got to be, geez, man. When the hell was that? 20, 25 years ago, I met Rich. He was having some trouble. I helped him out, and he definitely sort of credits me, and we'll talk about it, for helping him get sober, which is what we do, is we do that for other alcoholics. And oddly, I think the way I have him on the show today. But I'm not sure how it really happened. I think he reached out to me, and then I was having sort of a basic kind of sobriety crisis. And there's only a couple of people I call for those, just two, and I didn't feel like talking to them. So I thought, well, let's see if Rich can handle it. And we kept it on the level, straight sober talk. I wasn't going to drink, but I was having some ism shit, and he talked me through it. But look, I've known him for a long time, and he just popped up and said, hey. And I'm like, yeah, sure, there's another guy like that's coming up in the next couple months, Dustin Chafin, who actually opens for Nate. He's another guy I knew 20 years ago in New York when he was a kid, and he's sober. And Rich and Nate actually were roommates, I believe, at one point. Anyway, so is Dustin. These guys are coming. They are the generation between me and the youngins, and they're popping up. So Rich is on the show today. His most recent comedy special is called Rich Aronovich, The Artist. You can watch that on YouTube. He's a funny guy. He's a lively guy. We had a good talk. So look, let's talk about this. Mariska Hargitay is Monday's guest, and I highly recommend you check out the documentary she made before listening to our talk. Seriously. It's called My Mom Jane. It's about her mother, Jane Mansfield, but also about a lot more. There's some real twists to this story, and it's a great doc. I found it moving, surprising, and it was great to talk to her. You can watch it on Max starting tomorrow, June 27th. So do that. Do a little homework. Yeah, so phone is still charging. So that's good. Well, maybe we'll see how this all works out, how we get through this conversation I'm having with you now. Is there stuff I need to talk to you about? Yeah, kind of. Fucking Charlie, you know, I'm supposed to take a little trip out to New Mexico to see my dad. And Charlie just gets a whiff of it. He knows that I'm going to go. And, okay, I've had a lot of cats. I know when a cat has a UTI. I know when a cat has crystals. But my cat, this cat, Charlie, to be honest with you, he just likes pissing in things. All right? Sometimes I have a Pyrex measuring cup, a large one, that I use to pour the water for my cone coffee in. And a couple weeks ago, Charlie somehow managed to piss in the measuring cup without getting pee anywhere else. And he also likes, if there are clean frying pans on the stove, he'll pee in those. And then I've got to have grates all over my sinks because he likes peeing in sinks. If the dishwasher's open, he'll pee in there. But he's not, doesn't seem irritated. He's not like peeing out of the box randomly. He picks receptacles, but maybe someone will contact me and say, dude, you got to get him checked. He's probably got UTI. But, you know, he's eating. He's not sick. He's not licking down there. I don't know. Maybe, oh, fuck, do I? But all I know is I'm about to leave, and he pisses right in front of me near the water, and then he starts beating up on Buster, and it's like, come on, dude, just fucking get it together. I think I might just have to put him in one of the other bedrooms for the entire time I'm gone, because I can't have Buster all freaked out. Anyways, no one is more tired of talking about Charlie the asshole than me. And maybe he's eating fine. He doesn't seem to be in pain. He's not crying. He is peeing in the box still. I don't think he's sick. He has a thing for peeing where it's wet or peeing in pans. And occasionally a Pyrex pitcher. The fuck? So, yeah, I got to deal with that. And, you know, I'm annoyed. I don't know what to tell you. It's all this shit goes down before I'm about to leave, drop the fucking phone in the toilet. Cat beats up on Buster, pisses right on the floor in front of me near his water. He likes the wetness. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about wet surfaces and pans and a Pyrex pitcher. All right, what else is going on? Kit had a hell of a day yesterday. Apparently, she was in the dog park with her mini bull terrier. The Beezer, and there was a fracas. Some shit went down at the dog park. Apparently, some woman's dog, someone brought an unfixed female dog to the dog park, which apparently is not allowed. And then, as the story was told to me, some woman's dog, a male dog who was neutered, just started humping this dog because, you know, the smell's a smell and, you know, old habits die hard. Don't die easy, whatever. So apparently this male dog got a whiff and started humping on this woman's dog, young woman who seemed a little out of sorts. And the woman said, look, your dog's beating up on my dog. Your dog's fighting my dog. And the other woman was like, no, that's not what's happening. I think you know what's happening. I'll just get the dog off of your dog. And she's like, no, he's beating up on my dog. and then just starts yelling at this woman and then takes the top of one of those retractable leashes and pops this other woman right in the head. And Kit's like, what the fuck is happening? Runs over there to try to settle things down and to break it up. And then, you know, apparently Kit gets pulled into it, gets pushed on the ground, gets up, takes a pop at the woman beating the other woman up. And then it was just, no one would let up. Finally, people came around with cameras. And I guess the woman who was hitting everybody jumped in her car and then tried to run over some people and peeled out. This is like, this is the kind of thing you only see on Instagram Reels. Wow. I'm waiting to see it. We're all waiting to see it. But they had to wait. They had the woman who got hit in the head wanted to file a police report. And Kit was pretty shaken up, obviously. And we talked about it for a while. But I think ultimately what bothered her the most is that after all was said and done, she doesn't feel like she knows how to throw a punch. So I guess the arc of this story is, and the big payoff is that I think she's going to go learn how to throw a punch. I don't know if there's just basic learn how to throw a punch classes, but there's got to be. So that'll be interesting. She's pretty scrappy already, pretty angry little fucker, Kit. And now if she knows how to throw a punch, whew, watch out. But, you know, sometimes silver linings. She's already tough. Now she's going to learn how to fight. Anyway, look, I feel like I'm saying anyway a lot today. I think that's all I got. I'm happy you guys are here. This is a fun talk with Rich. We go way back. He knows things about me I didn't know. I'm going to hear some of those things. And now you will too. Okay? So, Rich Aronovich, his comedy special, Rich Aronovich, the artist, is available on YouTube. And this is me talking to young Rich. When did you get here?
I got here yesterday.
Yeah?
I was in Vegas.
At the Cellar?
Yep.
How was that?
For the most part, it was good.
Yeah?
There's a weird thing with a guy that I was working with, and so it was in my head a little bit.
Oh, yeah? I mean, without mentioning names, what could this weird thing be?
When I quit, I got... So I hit a bottom in like 06 with my drinking and other stuff.
Yeah, I was there for that.
Yeah.
Wasn't I?
Yes, we were in a car in Queens.
Yeah.
And we talked for many hours, so I always have a...
How did that unfold? Because, like, you know, I've been in touch with you over the years, and oddly... What's that?
Oh, that's my phone.
What was that noise? Never heard that one.
That was the meditation I was trying to do before I came in that here, so little... I'd get out of my head.
So that was the little chime?
It was like a, there's like a meditation thing.
Oh, so it guides you? A guy talks?
No, it just goes, whoa, it's like this.
It just does that.
It just does that so that you think you're in like...
What?
In a meditative state so that I'm not listening to the ticker of news of bad information that's going across my mind at all times. You're not enough. You'll die alone.
The internal fake news?
Yeah. You're awful. You're terrible. You're unlovable.
Yeah. Well, you know, now that you mention it, you don't think any of that's true?
No, I think all of it's true. I think that's the problem. I think all of it's true.
Why do we insist that we're wrong? That's the question. Like, yeah, I never thought of it until now that... You're supposed to have all these, you know, I'm too hard on myself. Well, maybe I deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then there's part of you think that you do deserve it. Then exterior forces or people say, like, why do you do that to yourself? And as if that's not some self-regulating mechanism.
I mean, don't you think Michael Jordan was too hard on himself? And look what it got him. He was the best.
Okay,
so. You think he was satisfied?
So you're on the Jordan trajectory?
No, not at all. No, I'm not even close to that, please. But I'm saying that there is a motivation that might let you work harder.
If you're applying it to a skill set. You know, I suck at basketball.
Correct.
Right. As opposed to I suck at everything.
Correct.
Right. Right. All right. So walk me through. You live down the street.
I live close to you. You offered me a ride home.
Oh, so that was when I was there doing Break Room Live.
I think it was, well, I don't
know. So 2006.
I think 2006, maybe five. It's funny. I came in here with the preconceived notion I wasn't going to talk about this, and it's the first thing that comes up. Boy, I'm in control.
Yeah, well, I mean, why wouldn't you talk about it?
So, I don't know. So you sat, we talked for hours. I remember.
I knew you before, right?
I knew you from the Lower East Side rooms, from the surf reality and.
Right. You were just this kind of, you know, hyper kid with a Jufro.
and a dream.
Very intense. And you had a bunch of roommates out, but you lived near me, like literally blocks away, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I was living, because I lived with Dustin Chafe and Nick Novicki and Nate Bargatze. I don't know if that was that time.
Well,
that was the same apartment, though.
That's your timeline.
That's my timeline. I don't know when it was.
Well, it might have
been. No, you know
time.
What? It probably wasn't. Oh. It was probably before then.
Because I knew Dustin.
Yeah.
I don't think Nate sort of arrived on my radar. I didn't know Nate.
Yeah, he's
in
later.
New York.
You know, he was later.
In your life.
I think you were gone when he came.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Because Dustin had that horrible room over in Midtown somewhere, right? That it was like a room in a place.
He had a lot of rooms.
Yeah.
He ran a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Hustler. Guy's a hustler.
And they used to do that rocking thing with his hands. Hey. You know, like he'd always, every delivery he'd like kick back.
Yeah, he would
throw his hands up.
Back then, I don't think he's doing that anymore, but he had like a physical thing. Yeah, he had a physical thing.
Yeah, that he was doing on purpose.
On purpose. It's sort of like,
cowboy boots.
Like, yeah, he had a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
And he had that thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you drove me home, and then I was
from
like—
From the Lower East Side, probably?
Probably from the Lower East Side.
Because you're exuding some problem?
You were probably looking at me and being like, I see myself years ago.
Yeah.
And you were like, there's sort of identification. You were like, I get that angst and that turmoil.
Yeah.
It's very relatable. Mm. And then we talked about it. And then I started to justify like, it's okay to be, you know, self-medicated all the time. I mean, look at this guy.
What were you doing?
I was smoking a lot of pot from the minute I woke up. And if I ran out, I would smoke resin. And then if I ran out of that, I would just drink. It didn't matter if it was 10
sad
in the morning.
Sad day, sad moment with you and the bong scraping the little pipe, huh?
Yeah, it's very, I used to watch
resin
Intervention.
Never really got you high.
It just
gave you something to do.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I would pretend like it was hash.
Right. You get the resin out of the, what were you using, a bong? Or just a pipe?
Pipe.
Yeah, so you
and
pull,
bong and whatever.
So you scrape the resin out and you get like one little wad of resin. Then you stick that on top of a little pot and you think it
It kind
really
of crackled and it sounded like tears, which was appropriate.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but, good. So it was just mostly pot?
Yeah, mostly that. I mean, but it got out of control. I mean, it went
to
everything.
No booze?
Oh, yeah, booze too. I mean, I would wake up on a bare mattress going, I'm not going to do this again. I'm
done. In
your
clothes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I would get to, and the next day, like this.
I'm going to make that bed.
Yeah, I'm going to make that bed. Like bare mattress. No, not even a sheet on it.
Yeah, no.
Just a bare mattress. And then I would say, I can't do this. And then I would do it again that night. You know, I'd say, because I'd walk in and the bartender would just slide a drink in my hand.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was the big benefit of being a comic and a regular at a club is that they would enable your alcoholism for as long as you wanted to go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was quote unquote free, but you tipped and you paid a lot of money for that free. It was terrible.
No, I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was great.
Sometimes.
I mean, you know, the free, I remember Catch a Rising Star in Boston, like it was in Cambridge, and every comic came in from their one-nighters or road gigs and just converged on that place at like midnight or 12:30 for the drinks.
Yeah.
It was the best.
We used to hang out at the Bag It Inn underneath the Boston Comedy Club.
Oh, yeah, that place. What was the guy's name? Tom? The guy who ran the place, the Irish guy? Was it Tom?
There was like Ronan. He couldn't understand a word.
Oh, was it Ronan? Yeah.
I drank with that guy for years. I never understood one word he said.
Lanky guy?
Yeah. Hey, how you walk around? What do you
mean? Yeah.
How you drive right there?
Well, he was.
Hey, I walked around. I said, what did Dustin name? Your man went right there.
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah. And what?
Yeah.
I said, how you drive right there? Zane and Ortiz right there?
Yeah. And you're like, great.
Yeah. And you were like, good. Can I have my medication now?
And he did the bar upstairs, too, at Boston Comedy Club.
I think it
was like they ran that whole
they ran
business.
Up and down,
and they used to have hippie music downstairs.
Yeah.
There was a deep room, and there was a stage at the end.
And I used to play harmonica with some of the guys there.
Oh, yeah?
So I'd hang around.
Sure. You're a regular.
I was a fixture. Yes.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Yeah, you were destined to still be that guy.
You're right. Even though the club doesn't exist, I'd still be there.
Because you see those guys, you know, in New York, like, oh, that guy's still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, are you that guy?
No. I was on the road to be that guy, and then I got a ride home from you.
You decided that wasn't a good life career plan?
Well,
to be that guy?
It became painfully obvious, because what happened was it went out of control, and I was low blood sugar. Like, if I went, I don't need to eat, I'll just drink. I was a maniac. I mean, just out of my mind, more so than normal.
Yeah.
And so one night,
Is this the ride night?
No, this is—
Before?
This is before. This is before the ride? I can't remember the trajectory, but I remember I started to realize this is getting out of control.
Sure.
And I knew I kind of had a problem and things were bad. And then at some point, I don't remember where. Yeah. I remember the seed was planted like, hey, you might have a problem.
So I'm driving you home.
So you drive me home.
And what do I say?
You sit in front of a thing and I say, you know, I don't know if I have a problem. I mean, look, it works for this guy. And you go, that hack?
Yeah.
You know, it was a guy. I'm not going to say his name either.
Yeah.
But, and then there was another guy. And you sort of had an answer for all of my lies.
Yeah.
My justifications.
Right.
You sort of said this. And then there was something in the way that the message hit me with what I would say was with depth and weight.
Yeah.
Where I went, it wasn't like you need to. It's like, this is what's going on for me.
Yeah.
So it had a relation where
we weren't having that conversation for no reason.
Correct. It was like a real connection I felt. And then I let the air of a meter maid's tires as a Canadian citizen. One night I came home, they're writing, you know, they're giving me tickets. I got my car towed and I was like, look, I have the quarters here. And they said, once I start writing, I can't stop.
That's right.
And I went around the corner, their car was there. And so I let the air of four tires.
Yeah.
They chased me up my apartment. They came in.
Yeah.
I got arrested. I got charged with a felony.
Yeah.
As a Canadian citizen, that's you get kicked out of the country for life if you get convicted.
You would now. You might still. Yeah.
But well, they might come back now. Yeah, I became an American. So,
yeah.
So I had a problem. So I realized, okay, now it's definitive. Now it's like, okay,
I'm in
this
jail.
I'm in jail, and like, I'm not gonna last. I'm not with the cute, you know, the cute ones. I'm with the really scary people.
You spent a hard night where in county or Rikers? You didn't go to Rikers.
I didn't go to Rikers. I was
just
in Queens.
The precinct.
I was in Queens.
At the precinct?
Yeah. Because I looked across, it said misdemeanor, and I said, hey man, what's it say about me? He goes, felony. I went, I got a problem.
Yeah.
So I made the one call to my sister, who's a lawyer, who got me a lawyer. And I started going to court. And my lawyer was like a big deal. He was a big macher, as they say.
Yeah.
And he was able to sort of kind of, you know, control the narrative. And they go, I embarrassed my competition. So he's not just going to say, all right, as a first time offender, knock it down. Let's get out of here. He wants to, you know, he's coming after me. And I go, should I get a different lawyer? He goes, no.
Who's coming after you?
The prosecution.
The DA?
Yeah. He hated my lawyer, so he wanted to punish me.
That's always good. You know, that happens in divorces too.
Yeah,
it's not about you. It's about this.
Completely.
Cockfight between.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I have court. I'm months in, and I have court the next day, and it's my birthday, and I have stopped drinking. I'm not doing anything about it.
Is this after our talk?
After our talk.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our talk planted the seed. I'm about to get kicked out of the country for life. Maybe I have a problem.
For letting air
out of a meter maid's tires.
It's like Cool Hand Luke for cutting off the heads of parking meters.
Right.
He's on a work farm.
Right.
Like, chain gang.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah.
So it's the night before I have court at like 8 in the morning in the middle of Queens, and it's my birthday. And
you had to hit, right?
Well, this is what I was dealing with in Vegas. So there's a guy who used to. I went to South Africa and did a festival with him and a bunch of guys. And they were pranking me the whole time. I mean, just all the time.
You were sober or not sober?
No.
Oh yeah.
No. And so I was definitely the weakest gazelle. And they were. And this dude, he knew I wasn't. He knew I had a problem. He knew, and he put a shot in my mouth.
Yeah.
He put it up to my lips and he said, we're going to drink. Come on, it's your birthday. I was like, I can't, you know, this. But I didn't really have any kind of defense against that. So I just went.
This is the night before court?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then it was one, and then it was like another, and they were all drinking with me a lethal amount of alcohol. I mean, lethal. Like we're talking like 18, 20 shots with three drinks. And then the last drink was just like pure Tabasco.
Yeah.
And they showed me that they were drinking Sprite with a splash of Coke. And I was the only one drinking.
Yeah. Why did the Tabasco come in?
I don't know. Just to make me throw up blood. I have no idea why that was.
Throw up blood?
I'm pretty sure. I all I know is I blacked out and I woke up with my glasses wrapped around my face, like
where
on my bathroom floor.
Oh.
And I was like 2 hours late to court with like 75 missed calls from my lawyer.
Come on.
And somehow he, because he did know the judge,
yeah,
he was able to get me out of, you know, immediately, you don't show up, you're done.
Yeah.
So he was able to make some excuse and yelled at me like I've never been yelled at before. And I remember kind of having a conversation with him going like, dude, I know you don't understand the nature of what it means for me, but like you knew this and I was thinking it's kind of cruel. And like, it kind of sucks you did that.
He yelled at him? He yelled at you?
No.
The lawyer said
The comic who put the drink in my mouth.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of a shitty thing to do.
Sure.
It's not like, it's not fun for anybody.
And you still resent that guy?
I didn't. I let it go. But then he brought it up again and said, oh, I can't make it. And then I was like, oh, here we go again. And so then my mind started working and grinding on him.
But I mean, like today.
Today we're good. Because at the end he said, I'm sorry. You know, I realized. And I go, I don't mind. Like, but without you, I don't have, you know, I got away. But there was a real consequence.
Yeah.
And it was just for you to get a goof and playing with my life. It's kind of like, I don't need you.
But did you tell him I got court tomorrow?
Yes. He knew all the information. Yeah, I said, I can't. I have court.
Yeah, but, you know, idiots will be idiots. Friends will be friends.
Yeah. Like,
let's fuck with this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I
you're a clown, Rich.
I am a certified clown. I'm a loud mime. Yeah.
And it's like, let's make that guy all silly.
Yeah, no. Oh, definitely. I mean,
how'd your lawyer work this out?
What happened was he waited. He said, I'm going to delay. And watch, they're going to get, we have a right to see the evidence. But if I keep playing with the court, by the time I do it, they're going to fix, they're going to put the air back in there. They claim like I broke a window and I didn't do stuff. So I go, I'm going to ask to see the evidence. They're going to realize they're dead to rights and then they're going to plea out.
Right.
It's exactly what happened. He asked to see it like 8-10 months later. They said, let's make this a violation, do community service, pay a little fine.
No felony.
No, not even a record.
Oh,
so the only record is me talking about it now.
You did community service?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Demoralizing.
What'd you have to do?
I picked up trash on the side of the road in an orange vest.
Oh, really? So you had to meet a bunch of other cool guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you all suited up?
Yeah.
And you walked along the BQE or what?
Somewhere in Queens with the stick and the, you know,
boom.
Yeah. Put it in a trash bag.
That's not bad.
It was for a week. I think it was only a week.
I had to do community service once because I got cocky.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had a buddy in high school that was constantly getting speeding tickets. And he had a lawyer and he'd go to court with him, you know, and, you know, try to get out of him. You know, he's just a kind of a fuck up. And I remember I wanted to follow his lead. I got a speeding ticket or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I used his lawyer, you know, and we went to court to get me out of it so I wouldn't get lose my license, or I don't know where I was at with all that. But the judge happened to be the father of a couple of kids I knew, and one of them I kind of bullied. And this guy was not going to put up with any of it. Like, I think he knew me from his kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was two brothers, and one of them, a couple of Jewish kids, Randy Bear. I can't remember if I knew him from camp or I knew him from school, but this judge, their father, was like, you know, no, I'm not letting you off. It's going on your record. You're going to get the points. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay the fine, mm-hmm. and you're going to do like 30 hours of community service.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, I used to vacuum the halls at an old folks home.
Mm-hmm.
That was mine, which is not terrible.
That's
a little weird because, you know, old lady would come out and go, will you do my apartment? You know?
But that's funny because I was picked on as a kid. I was I was one of the, I think, three Jews in my school, and I grew up where David Duke got elected.
Yeah.
So I would go to Jew camp like you, and I would be the bully.
Yeah.
I would be the alpha.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I wouldn't call that the alpha.
The olive.
Yeah, you were the olive.
I was the olive.
Yeah, you weren't the bet.
That's right. I wasn't the bet.
Bet. Maybe. Cuck.
Yeah, the bet. You know, I was like always doing like you said, I was doing clown. I remember I was like 7 years old, and they. And I did the talent show, and I memorized a Rodney Dangerfield book and put on a tie.
Yeah.
And so I did it. I remember
at camp?
At camp. And I remember, like, I finished, and they erupted, and I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, so go back. So you do the trash collection, and then how does this lead to you finally not drinking?
After I had, you know, sort of drank again, it was on for a while, and I had gotten to a point where I thought no one knew, so I was like hiding and drinking sort of by myself.
How's the career going at this point?
Oh, phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I'm working really, at Ha Comedy Club in Midtown where I'm
doing,
seven shows a night, every night,
The
same, you know, the audience. I had a woman throw up at me during the show.
Oh, really?
And the owner handed me a mop. That's how much they had our back. So I was, you know, mopping and telling, trying to tell
come
jokes.
On,
I swear on my kid's life.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. The first two rows bailed. And so I was still trying to do jokes while I was
during
mopping
the show?
A puke. Yeah, during the show. The show must go on, Mark.
That's a unique night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, so when people are like, you know, can you handle, yes, I can handle it.
Yeah.
the only thing I really can't handle is when they're talking to them, each other.
Yeah. You know, when they're not paying attention.
When they're not paying attention, I can't, that hole needs to be filled with your eyes and ears.
Yeah.
You can yell at me, but as long as you're giving me attention, I'm good.
Yeah.
Positive or negative.
Really? You deal with the negative, Ari?
Yeah, I don't mind. I'm okay with hecklers.
No, I don't mind hecklers.
Hecklers.
But yeah, okay. So all right. So that happened. So what's the moment you get sober?
So I see Jessica Kirsten and I are like best friends, you know.
Yeah.
And I see her on her birthday walking away with all of her friends to go celebrate, and I'm not invited. And I'm smoking a cigarette outside the Bag It Inn, and I just felt that that moment of just like,
was she sober yet?
Yeah. She couldn't be around me, and I was sick, and and so I just remember that feeling of just I'm just like the hole in the donut, you know what I mean?
Sure,
like,
I've heard that one.
Yeah, that's
your shell.
I'm a shell. Yeah, exactly. I'm like whoa.
An energetic shell of a man.
Yeah. So then I start, you know, at some point I'm hooking up with this girl. I'm the cheat. You know, she had a boyfriend. I'm the cheat, and then I stumble into her apartment unannounced at like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Drunk?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
the boyfriend's there?
No, but he's texting. The new guy is texting who I think she's with, and I get loud and I scream and yell at her and I leave and I fall down the stairs. Or I got beaten up by a one-man guy and I'm in the back of an ambulance and I have no idea how
you're
I got
in
there.
Ambulance?
Yeah, I ended up in the back of an ambulance.
You don't know if you got beat up or fell the stairs?
No clue. I just know like part of my body was really not good. So I figured I might have fallen down, like woken up in the back of an ambulance.
Yeah.
And I went, okay, I'm going to die. I got to stop this.
Going to die.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm going from like maybe I'm going to get kicked out of the country. And then then the new bottom is, okay, you're going to die. So I was like, all right, I'm done. And then I haven't put anything that changes my mind since that 2 days later.
How many years is that?
16 going on 17.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Took an ambulance and a jail.
Yeah. And a lot of bad feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it? Is jails, institutions, or death?
Death, yeah. And then
is there one other one?
No, that's it.
It is? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so then at like 87 days, I wasn't doing anything, and they said, don't make any big changes. So I moved to California.
Wait, you mean the recovery thing?
Yeah, whatever.
First 90. Yeah. Don't 90, don't make any changes.
Yeah, the people were saying don't make any changes. So I moved to California.
You were here?
I was here. Not only was I here, Mark, I realized there was no money here. So I was doing like every job to try to make my rent. I had like an $800 up room in Studio City.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to do it. So I started selling knives at Costco.
You were that guy?
I was
that. You're probably good at that.
Well, I remember I was in the middle of a pitch. And you walked in. And I was in the middle of, these knives are good for cutting chicken bone, hand bone, lamb bone, and also cook. And I see you, and I ducked under the table. So
come
you wouldn't
on.
See me. I'm not, why would I make this up?
Mm.
And so they're like looking, and they're like, where'd that guy go? And I just disappeared because I was so embarrassed about having to sell knives. I went, if anyone it's Mark! And I ducked under the table.
I went to a hotel once for a meeting, and Sebastian was my waiter. And he handled it well. And look where he is. You should have just manned up and said hi to me and acted like, you know, this is just what I'm doing right now. And you might be on a different...
I was out of my mind. I was, you know, I wasn't sleeping for the first 6 months. I didn't sleep. I used to watch that show 24, and I knew how many hours I'd been awake by how many episodes I watched.
Oh, my God. So what were you doing out here? Were you doing spots or...
So I was just trying to get, you know, healthy. I was just trying to get away from the heat because I had a lot of bad reputation stuff. And I was like, I don't want, you know, I'm just getting away from it. And
really? you were a guy who was around and, you know, aggravated, intense, once drunk, and then, you know, you got sober and you realize like, oh, they're all still kind of mad at me.
Well, I would, Yeah, I mean, I would hear stories about me where they didn't know it was me. They were telling me stories about me to me.
Oh, because you were a blackout guy.
Well, yeah, no, but they didn't know what my name was. They go, you heard of this guy?
Yeah.
I go, yeah, I've heard of him. And they go, he already did this and that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah, that, I know. Yeah, okay. And I was like, this is not good.
So you're such a, you were such a dick, but you're not really innately a dick.
Oh, I was sick.
Mm, sure.
I was, you know, I was...
So how long do you last out here selling knives?
Five. I didn't do it very long. I ended up touring with a guy for a while. That was awful.
Yeah?
Yeah, really bad. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say his name. But it was, and he's a guy just in fear and whatever and, you know, unhealthy. He was an unhealthy guy, dry guy, very unhealthy.
Uh-huh. And you were just doing road gigs with him?
I was doing road gigs with him and I was working at a little bit at this, you know, Z Club and whatever and a little bit at the store.
Yeah,
you know, this was when Tommy was booking.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, get here at 8. You're going to go on in a few.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, I'm waiting around till like one in the morning. Like I can't.
For what, like a showcase spot?
Yeah. To, you know, I thought, you know, I...
He'd take a look at you?
You know, he passed me, but then he didn't, you know, he would just have me come around.
So you're passed over there?
Not anymore. I don't think anymore.
Well, once you passed, you're passed.
No, I passed when Tommy was there.
So what? I passed when Mitzi was there.
Yeah, but people have heard of you.
No.
You're the who's... Who of comedy? I'm the who's that of comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm never out here. I mean, I would like to go on there, but whatever. So, so I was doing spots and stuff. And
I think Mitzi would have liked you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like a lively Jew. Desperate, lively Jew.
Desperate. You don't know the level. I was thinking about getting a haircut on the way over here. This is a podcast.
It's not even video.
Exactly. I'm thinking about what should I wear. I'm like, it's a podcast. yeah. So it was. So then I lit. It was fine. I liked it. And then one day I was started to tour with Jim Brewer, and that was cool. But I was a lot of East Coast, and I was flying. And then one day I lost the manager and the agent and the girlfriend and like everything within 2 weeks. And I went, oh, I hear the message. And I just moved back across the country, and it's been great ever since.
What, but where'd you grow up?
I grew up in New Orleans.
In David Duke country.
With David Duke. First Metairie until I was 10, where I used to get off the bus and they would beat me up for killing Jesus. Three guys, yeah, they used to throw eggs at our house during Passover, and they would put swastikas on my dad's building, and they would, you know, threaten us. And,
well, now that's, socially
that's cool.
Accepted material.
Now it's a meme.
Behavior, yeah.
Yeah.
But you were born in Canada?
Yeah, I lived there for 10 months.
So wait, your dad's from where?
My dad was actually born in Italy. His parents were running out of Europe. They had a gnarly... You know, my grandmother fell alive in a ditch with her family murdered, and she survived, but she waited.
The Nazis?
Yeah. And my grandfather was in love with her, so he waited for her because he paid off the soldiers to say – he was like this big musician, actor guy.
In Germany?
In Vilna, Poland. And so he said, tell me when they're going to invade. And they're like, they're going to invade. And his family wouldn't leave. They didn't believe him. You know.
So he left.
He left his family to die. And then he went to go get my grandmother, and they had lined her up in a ditch, and he thought she was dead, but he had to know. So we waited until the soldiers got drunk. They celebrated. They got wasted and passed out. And then he found out she was alive.
And this is where?
This is in Poland.
Yeah.
And then they started running out of Europe.
Oh, he went back after they went through the town?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they were all dead in the ditch because the Nazis killed them?
Yeah, but my grandmother fell alive. She was...
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so he grabbed her and their story's nuts.
Yeah.
I have it on... I recorded it before she passed away.
From her?
Yeah, from her.
So he finds her, and then what do they got to pay off people to get?
No, they started traveling on top of trains to get out.
Yeah.
So they would every time they got caught, they would either go to a death camp or a work camp. So my grandfather, in another language, would be like, "What are the buzzwords?" Like, so if it's comic, it's like stand up, punchline, segue.
Yeah.
And so he would drop the buzzwords when they interviewed him to make sure, and then he'd figure out what the task was in line to survive. So he could just go to work camp. And when they went to death camps, when they were supposed to go, he would say, "We're going to our death. Smell that's burning flesh."
Yeah.
He would spend the whole time breaking open the train and said, "We got to jump." And he would grab my grandmother and he would jump out of the train, and no one would ever go with him.
That happened more than once?
I don't know how many times it happened, but you know, enough where I heard about it.
Yeah,
you
know? Crazy.
Yeah, this is an uplifting podcast. What am I doing?
So they made it to Italy?
So at some point they made it to Italy.
Which wasn't as fascist?
It was because they had a kid during all this while they were dying.
Your father?
No, his older brother. father.
Yeah.
And then they realized they were Jewish, and some soldier grabbed the kid and killed the kid in front of my grandmother.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And your next comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
I think we should put a laugh track in this.
Yeah, we will later.
An 80s sitcom laugh track.
No, but so now they just got your father?
So now they have my father, and he's in Italy, and then they moved to Canada because they had a cousin that lived there.
Oh.
So they go, okay, we got to get to Canada. That person, and they ended up hiring him to help them out. And they asked my grandfather.
Hired.
Made it to Montreal somehow.
Oh, yeah.
And then they said, all right, they're in like the plastics and they used to like sell stuff to the farmers. Yeah. He said, all right, so you're going to dig a ditch because we dig a hole or something. My grandmother, I'm not digging nothing. No, I don't dig.
No holes.
No, I'm not digging. Like that means a lot. That's not, yeah, that's just a hole. It's a whole thing.
That's triggering.
That's, yeah, that was triggering, as they used to say back then. It made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, the ditch made her feel uncomfortable. Yeah.
So he fired him and he opened up next door to him and ran him out of business, which is kind of
your
crappy.
Grandfather.
Yeah, he was kind of crazy. He had some.
He's a spiteful guy.
Well, I think he had a little chip on his shoulder.
Really? From the Holocaust?
Yeah. And he used to, what's weird was,
do that.
My uncle used to tell me, he used to, like, they wouldn't eat. They would eat like one meal every day or two and they'd feed my father. But then, you know, they had another kid and they'd feed them and they would barely eat and they'd work 20 hours a day and whatever.
Oh my God.
And charity would come by and my grandfather would give to charity, even though he was charity, but he would give to charity and he kept saying, God will provide, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Insane to believe in God after all of that. He somehow had faith.
Well, what's interesting, I think, about faith is that either it seems insane or it seems necessary. I mean, you are alive.
And they loved me because I was the name. That's why I never changed my last name. The worst name in show business, Aronovich.
I think it's pretty good.
Oh, thanks.
Because your first name's Rich.
Well, it's Richard.
Yeah, I know, but Rich Aronovich. I told that to my girlfriend. She couldn't stop laughing.
She goes, what is that, a stage name?
Yeah, who are you talking about tomorrow? Rich Aronovich. She's like, oh, that, I like that.
It's short for Rich Aronovich.
Well, there's some guy who she deals with at work. I think his name is Bob Papadopoulos or something. And she just likes the alliterative nature.
Yeah, for sure.
It's fun to say.
Rich Aronovich.
Yeah, it's good. It's what are you going to change it to? Rich Aaron?
Not, right, Aronson, Ross.
It's all Jew.
Yeah, it's all Jew.
Yeah, yeah.
Lipschultz.
Yeah.
I'll change it to Lipschultz.
Jeffrey Ross.
That's Jeffrey's his original name. So I didn't change it because I thought, you know, I was like, the name is that, like, that's the survival name.
So your dad grew up in Canada.
Yeah, he grew up in Canada. And he's got, you know, he's got stuff from this. I mean, we get into a line at the bank. I remember being a kid watching, like, him start to just have this internal turmoil with, like, a bead of sweat going down his head because he was taught, don't get in lines, you know, don't trust government, don't trust uniform. There's a lot of stuff where it's like, you go, whoa, there's, you know.
That he grew up with.
Yeah, that he saw.
In Canada.
Well, he's, you know, I'm pretty sure he has memories of my grandfather screaming in the middle of the night from bad dreams of stuff that happened to him.
Yeah.
You know, and being alone, like that isolation, because they had to survive, so there wasn't a lot of upbringing. And so he's, you know, he functions as if he's got, you know,
and he generation. Has a younger brother.
He's got two younger brothers and he had a younger sister who passed away.
Oh, yeah. So why does he go to New Orleans?
They were in Montreal and they were worried about the French and English was really tense. They were worried about, something's going to happen, you know.
Like a
war or a something.
Because of the Montreal wanted to. Secede?
There was a lot of language tension.
Right, yeah, but they wanted to
succeed. Exactly right. The Quebec wanted to succeed. It looked like it could be civil war back then. So my mom's dad had a brother in New Orleans, and he moved down there. So they sort of left to go meet, you know, sort of hang out.
Your mom's Canadian too?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Otherwise, if she wasn't, I wouldn't have to get my citizenship.
You can't get dual?
I can't. Yeah, I have dual.
You have dual.
Yeah.
So in order to become American citizen, you don't have to.
I revoked my Canadian citizen, but I crossed my fingers, so it didn't count.
Wait, but so.
No, when I became an American, you're supposed to, I think Canada was, but you're supposed to like revoke all allegiance to any other place. I don't know what that was. I think, you know.
But you've checked, you still have Canadian?
I have a passport that's Canadian, so I'm assuming.
An up-to-date one?
I think it expires in the...
When did you become an American?
2005, right before Trump got elected.
Good.
Right. Good timing. Such great timing.
Right under the wire.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to do this now.
Yeah, I'm like, something's... But nobody, you know, nobody thought he was going to win back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So New Orleans, it was David Duke's district?
Yeah, where he got elected. If you don't know David Duke, he's a former Grand Wizard of the KKK.
Yeah, we know him. Yeah.
Who he had a
ran for president.
He ran for president. He won the district I was in and lost the governorship by about 2%. Like, yeah. It was really close. And he had...
But why that area?
That's just where we happen to live. I mean, my parents didn't have a lot of money.
There are Jews in New Orleans.
There are Jews in New Orleans. Yeah. They worked very hard, my parents.
Yeah.
They ended up, you know, doing mortgages and loans, and they did it with morality, which was unheard of.
Right.
So they would do stuff like, they would go, we're closing a loan. This is a tax I don't collect. This doesn't mean anything. This is like $3,000 in BS fees that everybody, 100% of the people you'll go to loan to, they pocket.
Yeah.
We're not going to pocket it. Just send me two friends if you know anybody.
Yeah.
And they would have the loyalty of being.
Oh, that's nice.
And then before Katrina, the government said, look, you want to fix up the lower Ninth Ward? We'll sell you these houses subsidized. You can renovate them and rent them. So my parents went, we can lower crime in this area because we'll give them central air.
Yeah.
And we'll give them washer and dryers because the crime spikes in like August because it's so hot. They all end up by the laundromat, you know, and it's tense. And so they go, we can lower crime. Let's do this. They finished the reservations. And then 2 weeks later, Katrina took everything out. So they didn't make a penny from all that money they put in there.
So
they ended up moving to Northern Virginia by my sister.
After Katrina.
After Katrina, yeah.
But you grew up your whole childhood in New Orleans.
Yes, my whole childhood in New Orleans. I was going to, yes.
How did you avoid the accent? Or?
At one point, I had a neighbor that I loved, and I started, you know, a mimic. So I started mimicking his accent, like not realizing it. I just took it on. And my father said, if you have a New Orleans accent, people will treat you differently.
Yeah.
You will be unemployable. You're not going to have, you're not going to go to a doctor's like, hey, how you doing, darling? You want me to get you some surgery? You're going to think they're stupid. So you can either stop talking like that or you can't see the neighbor.
Yeah.
So I said, all right.
You lose a friend.
You lose the friend or the accent. Yeah. Pick one. So I lost the accent.
And you had to consciously figure it out. But you don't think you had it to begin with. You just think emulated it.
I started to, and then he shut it down. But it's New Orleans accent does sound a little Brooklyn-y.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of...
Well, there's got to be a lot of different ones down there. Because you got kind of a Frenchy kind
you,
of
you
one.
Got the, like, the Cajun. There's no real French. It's Cajun and Creole. You know, Thibodeau Boudreau right there?
Yeah.
Kona Gombo Yaya?
Yeah.
And my dad had to have a secretary translate because he couldn't understand them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they put him on speaker, and they would say something, and then he would take it and put it on mute, and she'd go, what'd he say? And then
But what are the good things about growing up in New Orleans?
There was awesome food, awesome camaraderie, like there was a small town feel.
Yeah.
There's really great music stuff to do. I was able to, you know, go out at 15. You could get your license at 15 and go to bars at 15. The drinking age was 18 there.
Yeah.
So I had an old fake ID of a guy. Yeah. And I would get in anywhere.
I had a fake ID. Yeah. And we drove at 15 too in Albuquerque. Yeah. But this is when the kids weren't beating you up?
No, I mean, this wasn't when kids were beating me up.
That was when you were very young?
That was when I was very young. Yeah, those guys, they really, I mean, it was pretty great, but they were taught, you know, they were taught I was the enemy.
Jew.
Yeah, Jew.
Did they, and they egged your house and everything else?
Yeah, I remember during Passover.
Yeah.
And all right, ready to eat the eggs. Psh, you know, like hit the window. But it wasn't that timing, but it was like, they literally would throw eggs at our house and like just.
But did your parents have problems?
I mean, yeah, my dad had a swastika. I remember going into his office and I saw someone spray painted a swastika on his,
really,
you know, kind of his building and whatever. But yeah, and you know, one of the things I'm always like, you got to behave extra, you got to tip extra because they're going to leave and go, you see what they do, you know. I grew up with a mistrust and I feel like a round peg in a square hole kind of deal.
Sure. You know? But what happens, how do you get out of there?
You mean how to, I went to, you know, Jews don't send their kids to rehab. They send them to Israel. So I went to Israel for 10 months.
You were already fucked up?
Oh, yeah. I started high school? Yeah, about 16. It took off probably about 17, 18.
Yeah.
And so my parents didn't know what to do with me. So they said, all right, here's this program. You go to Israel for 10 months. You volunteer. You learn stuff. And you get college credit. And it's a lot cheaper. And go.
So you were pretty Jewy?
Yeah, I was pretty Jewy.
Your folks were?
Well, when my grandfather died, my dad didn't believe he was sick. He thought it was a manipulation to get him to go back to Canada.
Yeah.
So he had cancer, and he didn't believe him.
Right.
And he died really quickly, and my dad, he didn't know how to process the emotion, so it came out through we became a kosher home.
Oh, really?
We started going to synagogue. We would, Friday night, we would sit around and read these stories of, stuff. And it was quite nice in some ways.
Yeah.
I know it's born out of pain. Most of my Judaism is born out of pain. It's out of negative, don't let them, get you. It's not, there are some beautiful things within all religions, including Judaism.
Yeah.
You just have to sort of melt away.
So you kind of got locked into the tradition and all that stuff.
Yeah, but then when I went to Israel, the first thing it completely did the opposite.
What was it, a kibbutz situation?
Well, my first place was I was in a development town where they taught it was all the new immigrants from Ethiopia and Russia.
Yeah.
So I was volunteering teaching. I was at the zoo and teaching English to these kids who didn't speak, there was no language, there was nowhere to speak. So I learned Hebrew pretty quick, because I looked the part.
Especially
you still got it? That means I forgot everything. I know how to curse. I remember very little.
That means what you just said means I forgot everything?
Yeah, I forgot everything.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so I forgot everything. But I remember it was the second week we were there. And Hezbollah, we were going camping for my birthday, and Hezbollah started shooting rockets into our campsite.
Yeah.
So there was a terrorist kind of thing going on, and alarms and bomb shelters and running out and freaking out. And then the doors were all on off, so they'd slam constantly. So I kept hitting the ground.
Yeah.
So twice a day, and I'd hit the ground, think it was another bomb. I was nuts for a while.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I became very... scared. But I realized after that, I went, oh, my, I'm going to pursue my dream of being a clown.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so. Becoming a comedian. That was when I decided. And
when you were in Israel.
Yeah.
So, but you were there for 10 months?
Yep. 10 months.
Did you move around?
Yeah. We started in a development town. Then I went to a learning, in Jerusalem, we learned a bunch of stuff where, you got college credit. Then I went to a moshav, which was fascinating. It was a Yemenite and Moroccan moshav.
What's a moshav?
It's okay. The difference between a kibbutz and a moshav. A kibbutz is everything's communal. It's total hippie.
Yeah.
It's our dollar, not your dollar, not mine. It's our dollar. Moshav is they share the same equipment. They share the same land. They share, but they have their own kind of money. So it's like kibbutz light, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And really fascinating different cultures.
Yes.
Yeah. They cooked for you and they were just
all Jews though.
Yeah. All Jews.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of, a lot of Arabs and Palestinian and people that were just living peacefully amongst each other, this was the year that the first peace process happened. So it became the violence, which was kind of in the territories. It sort of all went into Israel. So it got really nuts. There was a big bus bombing. I almost was on that bus kind of deal. And a guy got beheaded on TV live. And my friends were at a restaurant. A guy got on their table and started spraying people with machine gun fire.
What?
Just crazy stuff. Crazy stuff.
What made you decide to do comedy in Israel?
This is what happened. So there was a talent show at the end of the whole thing. And I decided I was going to, for my high school, I was going to do it and I bailed. I was too scared. I didn't have anything. So I called in sick to my first performance.
To do stand-up.
Yeah. So then I went to, right at the end of my senior year. So then I went to Israel and I did it for my friends. And of course it's my friends. So I'm getting and then I come back. And then that summer I'm outside of this place in New Orleans. Called movie pitchers, where they serve alcohol and you can drink and watch watch a movie and smoke cigarettes. And I'm bored with the movie, so I'm outside and I'm making this guy laugh. And he's like, "Hey, we have a contest. It's an improv group. So if you tell a joke and you win, you come back and open for us." And I think I'm a comic because I did it one time.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So I go and I tell the street joke. I win, and I started doing stand up in New Orleans. And two parts of that story. The guy was Ken Jung. you know, the guy from The Hangover and Masked Singer.
He was a doctor.
He was, exactly. He was doing his residency in New Orleans.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he was the guy before he was anybody, you know, he was like, you know, and that was the guy, he was in an improv group. And then and I started doing under the name Smooth Daddy Johnson because I thought I'd get a laugh before I got to the stage because I was like 19, or, you know.
And what was your act?
It was horrible. It was, I had boxes, like I put hats under a box and I would play a character and tell jokes in that character.
For the hat.
Yeah. So like, yeah. And then one of the, I had my friend underneath, so I'd have the audience pick the hat and give it to me. But in one of them, it was someone's head. So they'd lift up the box and he would scream and yell at them. I mean, it was like vaudeville shtick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was 19. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just trying to, you know.
Getting laughs.
Yeah, I was just trying to get laughs in any way possible.
Yeah.
But played harmonica. I played the Circumcision Blues. Oh. And I played guitar. I played, I thought it would be funny to play the Two Life Crew song, but like really acute, you know, hey, we want some.
Sure.
And just the ladies, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You just.
You'd have a field day.
No holds barred. You just kind of did everything.
Yeah, yeah. I was just, you know.
How do you do the thing with the head, the stage?
So you have a like a tablecloth, so it covers one part.
Oh, it's under a table.
Yeah, it's on a table. So
it's
all
like
of the backs are on a table.
A magic trick.
Yeah. So you go pick a box number. And
that would be the whole set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was terrible.
And then so another set was the guitar stuff.
Well, it would be like exactly. I went from there, and then I went and moved to New York. I started doing the New York Comedy Club at the time was like the Walmart of comedy. It was like Al Martin's place.
Oh, and on 24th or whatever?
Yeah. So I did a comedy.
Three rooms, the one correct. That sat like four people?
Yeah. And then I did a comedy contest and there was no judges.
Uh-huh.
So because I said to the guy, I go, hey, did you like my set? He goes, yeah. I go, did you like the part with the glove? He goes, it was great. And I was like, there's no part with the glove. So my act became the comedy contest.
When did you decide you're ready for New York?
I didn't. I majored in theater. I went to Emory. From there, I was doing. So I went
you
to.
Finished? Oh,
so yeah, yeah. So this is what happened. So from New Orleans, I did comedy all that summer. Then I go to college and I go, I need stage time. So I'd run around campus, go, guys, did you hear that Smooth Daddy Johnson's going to be at the Depot? And they're like, who? I'm like, you haven't heard of Smooth Daddy? This guy's an amazing comic.
Yeah.
He's doing a free show. You got to show up.
Yeah.
Then they'd show up and it was me. And they'd already be like, oh, this guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I would bomb. But I kept doing it. I would go to the Uptown Comedy Corner in Atlanta.
Yeah.
It's a urban room, all black.
Yeah.
And they would say, if he's not funny, Earthquake, I think, was hosting. So if he's not funny, boo him. And I got booed off stage.
Yeah.
For years. I mean, I didn't do well once. Not one time. I tried everything. I tried the characters. I tried doing straight. I booed off for years. And I kept going back. It didn't faze me.
Oh, so Emory's... Okay, so you were in Atlanta?
I was in Atlanta. And I remember my friends came and saw me.
And you didn't go to the comedy club there?
Well, no, I did. The punchline didn't... They weren't having me. Yeah. I don't remember why. I was like, no, let me go to the hardest one. Where they, you know, they, and so my friends came and saw me, and they went and bought me like a Frosty. And I was like, what's this? They're like, are you okay? And I was this is just to get better. Like, this is what has to happen till I get good.
So you were a confident tanker?
I just knew that at some point it would click. You know, I had this like belief that like, okay, we'll try this. Okay, that didn't work. All right, we'll try this. Well, something will click.
You're doing everything.
I'm doing everything. It's the jack of all trades. It's not good.
It's not a point of view thing. You're just
There's point of view.
Yeah, you're just putting on hats and doing guitar.
How much point of view can you have when you're pretending your name is Smooth Daddy Johnson?
I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea who decides to do that.
Me.
Yeah.
A 19-year-old who thinks they're going to be a star.
Right.
So then I major in theater. The director brings me to New York to do an internship at the Performing Garage, the Worcester Group.
Oh, the Worcester Group.
Yeah. So I'm like, you know, I'm like.
It's like what you were doing could almost fit the Worcester Group.
Yeah, totally.
You just did it a little bit ironically. You could probably
get away. Totally. Like if I did it like not knowing how bad it was.
If you did it serious.
Yeah, like if I was like, yeah.
No, you're presenting it all.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, not trying to get laughs.
Yeah, yeah, for just sure.
The head.
And I did a, and then I was supposed to be in there for a sublet for like a month and I stayed for 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I go, oh.
Wait, and then you graduated?
I barely graduated from college. I mean, barely. I was very close to failing.
What'd you learn at the Worcester Group?
I just was an idiot. I don't know. I learned, I mean, I got to see some really cool experimental theater. I learned that I'm not an actor. That's what I learned.
Was Spalding Gray still around? Or
no, I think, no, it was Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe was around.
He would come back?
Yeah, he was around. I remember the first time I got a message for him, I was so excited because I was like, Mr. Dafoe, you have a message. He's like, yeah, put it on my desk. I was like, that makes a lot more
sense.
Couldn't
charm him. I couldn't either. Yeah. I had him in my, on the podcast. I couldn't get through.
Yeah?
Yeah, no. He seemed very sort of mildly upset with me the whole time.
Well, you're doing great with me.
Yeah.
I'm feeling very charmed.
Yeah, well, good. That's not a stretch.
Yeah, I'm hiding under tables if you walk in. Yeah.
I'm just waiting for you to break into the hat thing.
So then I lost the name. I started... hustling. I was in, I would hand, all those idiots that are handing out flyers, and that's my fault. I was the guy who, I
Boston?
Well, I started at Stand Up New York. I was the manager, so I'd wear like a fake
hat. Wait, you got a job as the manager of Stand Up New York?
Not manager.
Guys were handing out flyers before you.
Well, okay, let me explain. So for sure. But what happened was I got a job for $10 and they would, they say, okay, you seat people and bring them their food.
Is
and then
Stand Up New York?
Yeah.
When Carrie's still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Remember Carrie Hoffman?
Of course.
Who's this guy?
Yeah.
Oh, he's your client. Okay, put him on.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I do is because I was like, okay, if they think I'm the guy handing them the food and seating them, they're not going to laugh at me. So I'd put on a fake glasses and a hat with a fake ponytail and I'd switch shirts. I had like a disguise when I sat them.
Yeah.
So that they wouldn't know that that was the door guy.
But they just know that guy's odd.
No, they didn't. They didn't. I would be totally just when I sat him, I was odd.
The ponytail and the makeup, was that good? The glasses that you're fooling everybody with your hat.
I was. I had these glasses and ponytail with a hat, and then when I took it off and went on stage, they didn't recognize that that was the guy that just sat him. It was a different guy.
So you did well then?
I wouldn't say well. I was doing check spots, and I was. I think Brad Chapman goes, you're funnier than your material. but then I went from there. I met Louis Schaefer. Remember Louis Schaefer?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So he had me bark, and he taught me.
Where? At stand-up?
The Boston Comedy Club down in the Village. So he taught me these skills, and then I brought it to Times Square, and I started producing a sketch and improv show.
For Ha?
Yep. And then I started doing stand-up, and it was like Fleet Week, and we realized, okay, we'll do another show. Okay, I'll do another show.
You started a sketch and improv show?
Yeah, originally. And
so
then
you always had a lot of hats.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, man, it's right. A lot of
outfits.
Hats. Outfits, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Clown.
So, yeah, clown. So. Yeah, clown.
I feel like I saw you once in a clown outfit.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good. I took,
you know. Did you do juggling?
I can vaguely juggle. I can play harmonica. I can play guitar. I can, I can make sounds. I'm like the white Michael Winslow. You know what I mean? I can.
If I had no shame, I'd probably be you.
Yeah, shame. I have no shame. Yeah, there's not a. If I can get a snicker, I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah.
Anything.
You
anything.
Have shame, but not in terms of what you do comedically.
Yeah. I'm pretty. It's very hard. It's really weird to have.
Because I can play harmonica, I can play guitar.
Yeah.
I can wear a hat. I just couldn't do it on stage.
Right.
Yeah.
I lost all that. I shedded it away. I just do
How long did that take?
It took a minute.
I don't know. I saw the special. It looks like the opening is.
Well, that's the clown. That's the.
I know.
Like me.
Was that the character? What was the name?
No, the dancing sort of thing happened during the pandemic. Someone challenged me to the TikTok challenge. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
So I go on TikTok and it's like these young girls and the side boob and the butt cheek doing a dance challenge. And I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I go, oh, you want a dance challenge? So I put on a bikini to make fun of it.
Yeah.
And then I started, it blew up. People loved it. And then I was like, oh, great.
Yeah, now I was like this guy.
Well, I had nothing to do. So I was, you know, I started getting outfits and dancing in I was in the kitchen and people loved it. And I remember I was like, all right, this is really like my parents sat me down to have like an intervention.
They did.
They were like, you got to stop doing this. It's mortifying.
Because you're using your real name.
Yeah, exactly. And then this woman said, look, my sister's really sick. And instead of being scared, we're just laughing at your videos.
Yeah.
And then I was like,
that's when you start visiting hospitals.
No, that's when I was like, are you going to buy my t-shirt or not? No. your sister has to pay up front. No, then I realized I was helping people. Like, I was like, okay, this is a bad time. Everyone's scared on both sides.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just doing this dumb thing to make fun of TikTok, but I now became the problem. But like, it's helping people. So yeah. I went, all right, I'll do it. And then I realized it really exploded. So I went, all right, well, people, I can manipulate them into my stand-up by getting, oh, it's the dance guy does stand-up? That was the plan.
And then you can alienate them with the stand-up. And
then I can alienate them with the stand-up.
Yeah, like, this isn't the fun guy.
Yeah, this is, exactly. So the beginning of the special is sort of a nod to that, and then, like, I'm transitioning into the, this is who I really am.
Yeah.
And then I put out the special, and now it's doing what it's doing. And I'm, you know.
What's it doing?
It's doing okay.
Plodding along?
It's plodding along. Listen. Every time I look at the numbers or the likes or the comments, I'm dead in the wall. I'm dead. It's not, there's never a point where
what's it called again?
It's called The Artist. It's ironic. Yeah. The Artist. I don't think I'm an artist with the hats and the kazoos and the big shoes and the spitting flower. No, it's The Artist.
No, it's all straight stand up.
Yeah.
It's like 20 minutes, right?
No, it's 33 minutes. I broke it into two. Everyone said, it's too long. So I took the first. I went, oh, great. Let's make it two specials.
So there's another one?
There's one in the, ready to, I'm going to see how this one does, wait a few months, and I'll put out the
and
other
launch
one.
The second half?
No, it's not a half. It's its own separate thing.
Oh, is there more outfits?
There's no outfits.
Okay.
Yeah, it's there's no outfits.
Dancing guy again?
No more dancing guy.
So the second one.
I think I talk about, I don't know if I talk about the dancing guy in this one or, you know, how I got into the dancing thing.
Oh, I don't know if, I don't think you did.
No, so then it's on the next one.
So that's the thing, man. People are doing 33-minute hours.
Well, I did it, I shot in, an hour and whatever, in 10 or an hour and 20 or whatever, and I went, cut this, get this. And then once I put it all together, everyone I talked to said, no one's going to watch an hour. So I said, oh. All right.
I don't know why people say that.
Because I think the attention span has dwindled.
True? But is it true? It's all based on algorithm. So in a general sense, they can make these statements because they can see when people stop watching it. But that's not all people.
Sure. But
it's a ratio game.
But I mean,
this idea that we all have to accommodate people's inability. I mean, The Brutalist was nominated for an Academy Award. That's 3 hours.
Yeah, that's why I didn't watch it.
Not unlike my stand-up.
But you're also, you're coming from a different time where they had hour specials and there wasn't social media and people.
No, I understand that, but I do believe, and I'm not advising you to do anything other than what you're doing, but I just feel that there are adult people that if the show is engaging, can watch an hour of stand-up.
I agree with you. But that means that the next one, I have to write an hour. Now I have to write 30 minutes.
Oh,
it's a lot more.
You have to do the job?
You have to do the job. Yeah. But I'm not.
You have to create a new hour every year or so?
As you can hear from this interview, I'm not prolific.
Yeah.
No, I mean, obviously, I'm writing now.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the special. I'm like, I did that joke in 95.
No, you did?
Just one.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. It's okay.
It happens, but
I'm not upset about it, and it's not.
I'm definitely going to be thinking. This is the only thing I'm going to think about when we leave, for sure.
Really?
Oh, it's going to eat me alive. First of all, there was not one point you went, I liked it.
No, I like the special. You're a fun guy.
Okay.
You're a funny guy.
Wow. Caught. Did you see me just put the hook in the water?
No.
You had no choice.
I knew what I was expecting, and it delivered.
Insecure clown.
Diplomatic compliment. No, it was exactly what I expected from you.
Mark, you can't hate me more than I hate me.
I don't hate you at all.
Okay, good.
Never have.
Yeah, but I'm concerned about, I haven't.
What are you concerned
about? I'm oversensitive.
About?
So I'm concerned about your opinion of me, that person's opinion. I want people to like me, obviously. Why would I be in these
Maybe
outfits?
You should call the next half hour that.
Yeah.
I want people to like me.
I want people to like me.
How do you feel about your time here? Are you going to leave feeling okay?
I'm going to be a little bit in my head.
About what?
About the joke that you had in 1995.
I wasn't going to tell you.
That's going to kill me. But that happens,
I know what that. I don't care.
I had a situation where
I stole it.
I don't care. I know you didn't.
But, maybe watch my 95 HBO half hour. But that's do that.
when I was two.
Yeah. No, I'm really with that kind of stuff. To me, it's sort of like it's a general joke, you know, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a point of view joke. It's not about me per se.
Right.
And that's just, you know, that's, you know, everybody can do that.
It happened. Like, sometimes I'll see somebody.
Look, everyone talks about the same thing. We're both Jews. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one was it?
Huh?
Which one was it?
It's just a line that I used to do a joke where, it was about being in the South, and I used it as a tag. I'd pull it up without a whole bit attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it would just be like, I would say I'm a Jew, and then I'd say I was down South once, and you know, I said that, and I heard the guy in the audience go, "Nah, I knew it."
Yeah. Did I have that? I had that in there.
Yeah,
it was. That's in there.
Well, it's not quite like that, but it was. I knew it. It was after you do the sort of like, I need time to run the banks, and blah 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 blah. And then, you know, and then it was like, you know, yeah, I knew it. Yeah, it's an easy
It was
line.
A throwaway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a problem.
Yeah, okay, that's not a big deal.
No, it's not a whole
Okay, bit. I don't need to obsess on this and hire a therapist and do an intake and I'm an unoriginal.
It's an easy Jew joke, and I'm sure that a Jew did it before me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, yes. All right, so that's like probably a throwaway. Probably was an improv. I don't need to overthink it. Is what I'm getting.
You didn't steal a joke.
Okay, good.
And it's not the same joke.
But people, you know, there's people that are nuts about it. I got, you know, someone and I had a similar kind of thing. And I said, look, we got a similar thing. I'm just letting you know. I never saw you do it. It's on my special. Da, 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 da. And they forgot about it. They said, oh, it's all good. And then a few months later, it comes at, you know, coming
that's
at me.
That's because someone got in his head.
Yes, exactly right. Someone came in and said, this guy stole from you. And then they came in, put guns a-blazing. And I go, hey, man, we had this conversation. And I respect you as a comedian and as a person. But it's out already. It's not like I can cut it. It's too late.
And it's, what is it? It's one day. I have a joke now that, like, I've been doing it for a while. And it's kind of a throwaway, but it's definitely a joke. And I can't remember. Like, you don't know after a certain point whether someone saw you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, and any special is not going to hinge on one line, whether it's a throwaway or what.
Right.
But if it's a signature piece.
Right.
You know, so that's why I try to do long form personal stuff.
Right.
Because anytime you're talking about external things, you know, you're in that pool of people who are reacting to news or information.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know anything. I didn't even register that those ladies went to space. But, you know, people were doing material on it for a week or two.
Right.
I don't give a fuck.
Right.
You know, so I try to keep it as personal and cringy as I can.
Right. You're so cringe.
Yeah, a little bit.
So and even if I'm doing personal stuff, so I'm going to talk about my kids or whatever. People have stuff about their kids. And so we're kind of pulling from the same thing. I don't know. I mean, you try to be as original as possible, but
that's
it's
all. Yeah.
Nearly impossible. I mean, nobody has got something that hasn't been touched on or similar.
There's thousands and thousands of comedians.
Yeah. You just can't, you know.
Anytime, like, there are conversations about, you know, people stealing things, and then, you know, like, in the community, it seems to have sort of simmered down, but you know, the jokes that they're always accused of stealing, like that joke,
right?
I've heard 9 people do that joke,
right? And and there's also like reputation. I mean, at some point you go, okay, so when someone's a known clippy person, we hear about it.
Yeah,
you know who's kind of clippy and who you got to be careful of.
I guess I don't hear about anything anymore. I just see people that do a similar joke. I'm like, I gotta get rid of that joke, or you know, whatever. Back in the day, you know, I used to do a joke about, you know, smoking sections at airports, and mm-hmm. I was on a show with a guy who also had one. It was a different joke. I'm like, you're middling for me. Could you not do it so we don't double up? But I don't care if you do it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I get not stepping on, you know, you're opening.
I don't even, I don't really always know that anymore. You know, it all goes away, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing. I mean, there's other insecurities, you know. You know what I mean?
With other stuff.
Well, unless like it's like it's a topic that's a little off road and it's a little surprising and they're doing it too. You're like, oh, cuck. You know, that's just bad coincidence.
Yeah. But I mean, look, you know, since I'm obviously desperate to do well, which hurts the writing tremendously.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying stuff and I go, it didn't work. And, you know, and then try it again.
What happened to the guy that used to do Black Clubs?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What happened to him?
Yeah.
He started tasting laughter. Went, oh, I like that better. I like success better.
Where's the courage of that guy?
No, I'm doing stuff like, and I sandwich it between stuff that I protect it, but it's.
Sure,
it's,
everyone does. You need to do that. Yeah, yeah.
But I, you know, it's hard. And then also like I'm doing some stuff that I don't know what's offensive or not. Like I'm growing up in New Orleans where my parents are like, look, you know, tits are over there. You know, I joked about the Holocaust to my grandparents who survived the Holocaust. So there wasn't a whole like sensitivity thing going on in our house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That seems to have turned. I mean, if you can shoulder the reaction, I mean, I think you kind of talk about that.
Yeah.
Don't you? Fun of.
Yes.
The sensitivity of some people.
Yeah. It's interesting. We did the show in Vegas. And then after I talked to this audience member who was, you know, this guy had a great, it starts one way. It's a really good bit about trans. It starts one way. So it seems like it's right wing and then it turns left wing, but she turned off. Her brain just went melted on the beginning and didn't hear. I go, actually, and then I'm like, why am I fighting and defending someone else's bit?
Yeah.
But it was sort of like, it was frustrating because it was like her emotions were the most important thing. And that was all that there was.
Well, my question is like, why is anyone talking about trans people?
Yeah. Well, because I'm not, but it's topical. I guess I have a bit about it, like a little bit.
Well, I mean, if you want to disarm, you know, the weird kind of full momentum of the right wing's scapegoating of them or targeting them, I mean, that seems like a good thing to do. But it's just like I would see people at the Comedy Store, I'd see two or three people like on stage and be like, I guess I got to do my trans joke. It's like, you don't.
Right, right.
I mean, why are you letting your mind be dictated by right wing talking points if you're not going to push back on it? Like if you're just kind of making a joke and you think it's okay, but it's the joke doesn't end, you know, with the point being like, why are we talking about this at all? Then why do it?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's some people that like they look at the trending topics and try to write jokes about it. So that maybe, you know, their motive.
Well, but that's the thing is like, you know, these people that are free thinkers, you know, it doesn't seem that way because they're just, you know, regurgitating, you know, ideological talking points that have spread throughout every level of society. So that's not free thinking at all. You're just acting on the behest of this propaganda, right? And it's the same with people who do like, you know, crowd work, you know, on Instagram. The only reason that people do that is it interfaces perfectly with TikTok and Instagram in terms of the way the timing works. Oh, so you're not even free thinking at all. And first of all, crowd work, you know, on some level, and I'm not saying you, but it's like, you know, a high school student can do that. Any fucking idiot can do crowd work.
Well, they be able to do it.
But that the reason it's popular is because it's short bursts that kind of make it seem like it's happening in the moment, and it fits perfectly with the new platforms that distribute comedy.
Well, it's also you can't keep up with the demand. I mean, how are you supposed to put out three, you know, well-crafted bits a week and not have them come to your show and know the punchline before you say it?
But what I'm saying is that—
So you can just crowd work and they go, oh, they'll come see it.
But the demand is created by, you know, a corporate platform that is dictating how you structure your art.
Correct. And you can say either screw this, I don't want to be part of it, and then not sell tickets.
No, I get it. So, but when you sell tickets, you're expected to do the fucking dance with the people that you have to pretend like you want to talk to so you can get your little needs met.
Well,
huh?
Right.
Jew?
Yeah. I mean, fuck it.
What just happened? Was that about me?
What did I do? What was the question? How did I like my time here? It was great till just now.
I think you mix it up pretty good. I just think, you know, I think crowd work is a skill, and you do some of it, but it's usually transitional.
Right. So like what I try, because I host a lot at the Cellar, so I try to like, you know, very little at the beginning just to get it sort of the room settled.
Sure, sure.
And they feel like it's a unique experience, and I definitely leave in some material.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want the next comic, you know, it's a disservice to the show if they think it's a conversation.
Yeah.
It becomes a heckle fest. It's not fair to the comics behind you. Oh. You know, I try to think of that. Like I always try to save material for like when they drop the checks or when they do last call at the cellar.
Yeah.
That's when I'm supposed to, that's the, okay, this is your job is to eat, to take that. Don't bring
take
someone up
hit.
To, bring someone up to murmur.
Yeah.
You gotta check talk. Spot. Yeah.
That was the funny thing about being a headliner is that like, you'd always have to deal with the check spot.
Yeah.
Like, right. And it's right as you're setting up your closer.
Yeah. I learned to do like loud. Like I go, okay, do a sound effect joke. Do something loud.
I got to the point where I'm like, oh, you just get the checks? Well, let's just take a break.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone good?
Let's do the Any questions?
Do I have the attention back? All right, here we go.
That's when you do the crowd work, Mark.
Oh my God! There was a club that, and I lost my mind. It had they had the pay machine system.
Oh yeah,
which is fine. You know, it's actually I see how it's effective. But this particular bunch of machines that they were using beeped. So it was like it wasn't just a check spot. It was just like random like beep. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Has anyone brought this up to the owner? I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's got to drive you crazy.
Well, no, they fixed it, I think, because I lost my mind.
You brought it up. Did you say it in a nice way?
I don't have to say anything in a nice way. I'm of course, I know how to do that, but I said to the owner, I said, what are you doing? Because for me, it's like, I get this as a business. And that, you know, but the implication of the fundamental disrespect for the comic was sort of like you're overlooking that part
where
you're going to have the chirping machines all over the room through his entire closing bit. I mean,
can't you put it on vibrate?
Well, that's right. It was like some new system and apparently they fixed it. But like when I was there the first night, I was like, I lost my mind. So then they had to do it the old way where they take the checks to the bar and pay
and
them out.
You're the jerk.
Who gives a fuck?
See, that's where I want to get to. Who gives?
I understand it's a little extra work for the servers, but ultimately, in terms of the show, like if you're going to have a situation where people are supposed to respect the show, which is, you know, getting harder and harder in some ways with comedy, always has been. And I understand the relationship between, you know, we're just selling drinks. I get all that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still running a nightclub that is about the performers, at least a quarter as much as it is about making money,
mm-hmm.
right? And we can abide by rules, but like I'm just sort of like, you know, dude, you know what I mean? It's a good club, and you know I like working here, but I mean that's crazy.
But this is why aren't you doing theaters?
Yeah. But this is just when I was working out. I was just working out.
So you were doing like new stuff.
Yeah, I do clubs, and I don't mind doing clubs. I like doing clubs, but I just couldn't understand it. Just for other comics, even it wasn't even about me. I don't care. I'm not going to be back here for a year,
right?
But I mean, I said to the other comics, I'm like, "What? How long has that been going on for?" And they're like, "Yeah." I'm like, "No one says anything," and they're like, "No,
they're too afraid."
Right?
It's a supply and demand issue. Yeah, oh, you're a problem. Next,
right? It's sort of like, okay, we can go work somewhere else. But like to me, it's like, come on, man. You know, give us a shot. You know, whatever. It worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd you think I did on the podcast?
When?
Just now.
In the last 10?
He was wonderful.
It was a very nice conversation. And then he got squirrely. He kind of got in his head.
There it is. He got trapped in that news ticker. Came back up.
No, it was great. You feel good about it?
I think so.
I'm not going to turn the mics off until you sign off on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Then what do? You do like a little recap when I leave?
No.
I had a wonderful time.
No, I'm going to send the file to my producer. He'll trim it up and tighten it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then
you can cut out the part where.
Which part?
All of it.
Yeah, sure. We don't have to put it up at all.
Wait a minute.
You can just say we did it.
I'll use it as a credit.
Yeah. And people go, I can't find it. I'm like, we decided not to air it.
What I like about your podcast is there's no...
You listen to it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I listen to it. It's funny because I have a friend who said, you gotta listen. They wanted to give me advice. And I said, I can't hear anything you're going to say is going to be stuck in my head the entire time I'm talking to Mark. So I'm not listening to whatever. Let me just say this one. No, you can't. This is what's known as a boundary. Respect it or I'm hanging up. Mm-hmm. I can't hear whatever
people
you're
were giving
say.
You notes on.
They
how
wanted to
do
give
this?
Me on how to do this, and I was like, I'm just gonna. I've known this guy a while. I think it's gonna be okay. I said it's gonna go the way it's gonna go, no matter what you say. If you have control issues, keep it at your. You know what I mean? Just leave me alone. And so. Then it started making me get in my head. I go, well, what kind of advice? So I should probably listen to a few episodes. And I love it.
Yeah.
And so
you just started listening to it?
No, I listened to it
last week.
I listened to it before, like way in the before. Yeah. And then I was like, but I want to see how it's changed.
Sure. It hasn't changed much.
It hasn't changed much. Yeah. No. And it's I like it because it's a very honest conversation. You get in, you get in there.
Yeah. I will say this, in terms of this happening, it was funny because it was a very funny moment. What it was like a month ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I was having a real, they don't happen that often, and I usually have other people to call, but I was having a real spiral of a certain type that, I decided, like I need like pretty basic, detached recovery talk
mm-hmm.
from someone I know.
Right.
And, I went through my phone.
I'm at A.
I don't want to make it an insult, but I just decided like that guy is not in my life. He's a program guy. He owes me.
I sat in that freaking car in Queens for an hour and a half.
I changed that guy's life.
Yeah.
He's going to be the guy.
Well, I text you every year.
Every year.
Every year. At one time a year, I text you and thank you.
Yeah. It's very nice. You
and
do
it's,
that.
And it's motive free.
Yeah. No, I know.
I never go, I'm going to, because that's, when this, so you called me, I think you talked about this on Nick Thune's episode.
Oh, did I? Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Because I went, I think he's talking about me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And you were going through something and you called me and we had some nice, there was a lot going on.
Yeah. It was just a multi-level kind of spiral.
But I get spiral.
Well, no, I know we all do, but like I needed.
No, not everybody. No, people
but
don't
I mean,
understand.
People in
spiral.
The rooms.
Yes.
Like it was basic stuff. Like, I couldn't get back into the present. I wasn't going to drink, but I needed to sort of like, talk to another alcoholic
human.
who knew enough about how to program talk. And it's not just sort of like think or first thing, sort of do what's in front of you, but it is kind of.
Look,
you got a brain for it, and I got a brain for it, but I'm not living in that brain as much as I used to.
The thing that I realize, what gives me most joy in this world by 1,000,000,000% is when I'm just with my kids being a dad, and it's all service, but it doesn't feel like service.
Right.
It's just, sitting there, entertaining, helping them, feeding them, walking, doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I realized like that is the juice. That's the thing that really, all this
you
nonsense.
You don't want to ruin that.
No, I don't ruin that. Exactly. I don't want to ruin that. But that is the most natural thing I did not want to be a dad. I was afraid to be a dad. It is by far I love being a dad.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I didn't think I was capable. I didn't think I would be able to do it. I didn't think I'd know how to hold my kid. I mean, I am like super dad and I love it.
Yeah.
And it's, to me, it's more like all this other noise that I'm like, the special's got to do well. People got to go watch it. I got to go. None of that matters. It's like, I'm right there in that moment and they're moment to moment. There's no future. There's no past. It's like, they're right there.
Not till later.
I mean, right now, exactly. Yeah. But all I have is now.
Yeah.
This is all I have. I have right here, right now. That's it. So when I get home, it's going to be me and them and that's it. And then the morning, it's going to be me and them. And then they're not going to care. I'm going to get home.
What about the mom?
What about the mom?
She there?
Of course she's there.
Oh,
I'm in service of her too.
Oh, okay.
And she's in service
of
me.
You cut her out of that hole.
No, but I'm just saying it's a different thing because that's
we're
more,
there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's a more complicated. This is just, I'm daddy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
You know, and that's
the thing.
You're
getting that hole filled. That's why you have kids. It can be very entertaining.
Well, it's, they do think I'm funny. I'm not going to lie. They do. But they're also very funny.
You should tell them to click on that they watch your special.
I'm going to have to hide this episode from them. There's a lot of talk we're going to have.
How old are they?
1.5 and 4.5.
Yeah, I think by the time they find it, it'll probably be helpful to them.
It'll probably answer a lot of questions.
Exactly. It was fun, man. It was good talking to you, and thanks for helping me out.
Do I plug Rich is Funny and that's how they find it? Okay, great.
There you go. That was fun. Some good sober shit.
His comedy special, Rich Aronovich, The Artist, is available on YouTube. Hang out for a minute, folks. People, we've got some outtakes on the Full Marin this week. You can hear some additional stuff from my monologues, plus segments from Seth Meyers and Megan Stalter's interviews that didn't make it into the finished episodes.
I get actually nervous to do podcasts.
You do?
Yeah, I don't know why. I feel like I get too comfortable, say too much, then I'm begging people to take stuff out.
Do you have to beg or do they just do it?
They usually just do it.
Yeah.
But I start going like, why did I say that? I got too comfortable. I gave too much away.
Oh, really? Oh, what do you mean, like about yourself?
It'll be either gossipy or myself
yeah.
or something that I'm like, people could take that the wrong way.
Well, it's funny because I've been doing this a long time, and that is usually the reason why people want stuff taken out is because they said something about somebody. It's never like something right. about themselves usually. It's always like, yeah. that might not, you know, land the right way, and I didn't mean it to be there.
Well, I'm also never talking bad about a person. It's usually like, oh, I did a brand deal and they cut my hair too short or something like that.
And that's the big worry all day. You're like, oh, are they
yeah.
am I not going to be able to right. sell that stuff anymore?
Yeah, and it's like, they don't even work with me anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I hope why I do I care?
I hope I didn't hurt that brand,
yeah.
that like, corporation. To get that episode and all the bonus episodes we do for the Full Marin, sign up by going to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Don't tell anybody, but this is a little TS. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere.